The odds on how long the current drought will last are not posted in the casinos on the Strip, but if they were, one choice might have to be forever. Given this drought has the Southwest in a tight grip, the online investigative journalism magazine ProPublica has taken a deep look at water here. And to put it mildly, thus far, they have left no one unscathed. One headline attached to a graphic on the site says this: "Welcome to fabulous Las Vegas, while water supplies last." With us to talk about the series, which is underway and continues next week, is ProPublica reporter Abram Lustgarten. Abram, welcome to KNPR.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Your series began, of all things, with a look at cotton growing in Arizona, being irrigated there. And I want to come back to that in a couple of minutes. But first, I'd like to talk with you about your latest piece called The Water Witch. That's a reference to a nickname apparently embraced by Pat Mulroy, the former head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. She's credited with keeping the water flowing for development in Las Vegas, but your story took a different look. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, as you said, there's two views of Pat Mulroy's tenure. On one hand, she kind of performed miracles. She came into to be the chief water official for Las Vegas in the late 1980s and was immediately faced with a warning that the city was going to be running out of water within about 5 years. And she found water resources that made it possible for the city to enjoy decades of growth and considerably expand both its footprint, its economy, and its water usage until, you know, until she retired in 2014. On the other hand, she facilitated much of that growth, and that's what we really focused on in our story, is whether or not she had opportunities, or the water authorities and water districts had opportunities, to manage the distribution of Las Vegas's resources in a way that might have shaped demand and shaped the city's footprint differently.
Now, in the story, Mulroy is quite unrepentant about the work that she did at the Water Authority. In fact, on this show, she has been on with us a number of times and has been emphatic that Las Vegas's growth has not contributed to the decline in water levels at Lake Mead. Is she right about that?
Well, she's right in a sense. It depends on how you look at the numbers, as always. Las Vegas and Nevada uses a very small portion of the Colorado River. It has the rights to only a small portion of the Colorado River. So when you look at the bathtub ring at Lake Mead, she's correct in saying that you can't pin that blame for that on Las Vegas's use. But we looked at Las Vegas as a model for understanding how cities have grown across the West, for what urban water use represents and for how cities have drawn from the Colorado. So while we focused on Las Vegas, we hear similar stories about how water rights are managed in Phoenix and in Los Angeles. And Las Vegas, whether they use a large portion or a small portion of the water that's in Lake Mead, has continued to need more and more of the water from Lake Mead. Its growth has not been pursued in the context of the limitations of its environment.
Now, one of the conversations that we've had on this program and elsewhere, I'm sure throughout the Southwest, is that not just that Las Vegas's share of Lake Mead is quite small, dwarfed by, say, Southern California. It has to do with the use of water from Lake Mead and the Colorado River for agriculture. Shouldn't, perhaps, if savings are what we need, shouldn't the real focus be on reevaluating crops in the deserts of California in order to save water supplies for everybody else?
Well, no surprise, that's what folks in the cities say, and the farmers will say that the cities themselves should cut back. It's true that agriculture uses somewhere between 70% and 80%, the vast majority of the water in the Colorado River Basin. Undoubtedly, there are ample opportunities to increase the efficiency of that use, make some smarter decisions, and probably have better policy that guides how that agricultural water is used. And that's very much a target of the series of stories that we're putting together. Our first story looked at the use of Colorado River water for cotton production in Arizona, just as one example. But that's not to say that there isn't opportunity to change how water is used or to seek more efficient uses of water in cities as well. 20% of a very, very large number is, again, a significant number. And there's ample opportunities in urban water usage and zoning and building and development strategies to achieve much more efficient water use as well.
Political and business leaders in Las Vegas think in terms of growth, maybe industrial growth and not really organic growth. More than a decade ago, Pat Mulroy pressed for and got a one-year growth moratorium. And I'm wondering if you think that political and business leaders here need to reconsider maybe doing something like that again, or if perhaps one of the problems for Pat Mulroy's legacy was that the moratorium didn't last long enough and wasn't comprehensive enough more than 10 years back.
Well, I can only tell you what some of the experts that I talk to say. You know, they point to that early moratorium as an interesting moment in history because a moratorium in 1991 seemed to be the most logical response to being warned that Las Vegas was running out of water. Pat Mulroy explains to me that she wasn't sure at that moment how many water obligation letters had been sent out, how much development the city had already committed to. That's a kind of scary position to be in. And so slowing down growth is a natural way to get your arms back around that volume of water that you have to work with. Critics of the way that Pat Mulroy and her agencies managed that water over the years say that there were opportunities to allocate water usage or set even more strict guidelines for how that water can be used that might have, while not stopping or prohibiting growth, which is something that nobody I really talk to advocates for, might have shaped it in a way that is more sustainable. And that's the opportunity that that some of the folks I talk to think that Pat Mulroy missed.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the first piece in this series. This is the one that touched on federal subsidies for Arizona farmers to grow cotton in the desert. Cotton is one of the most water-intensive crops in the world. It's estimated that one cotton T-shirt requires something like 2,700 liters of water to produce. Tell us about what's going on in Arizona.
Yeah, so there's still today more than 100,000 acres of cotton planted in Arizona. But we're interested in looking at cotton not just because of the crop and how much water it uses, but because of the reasons that it's being grown. There really is no good market for it. The prices are very low. There's very little demand. There's a glut of supply on the global cotton market. And there's not a really strong argument from a business standpoint for why farmers would go out and grow it. The reason that farmers in Arizona tell me that they're still growing cotton is largely because the federal farm bill still supports them through subsidies, basically encourages them to grow cotton. It makes them better qualified for business loans from the banks and gives a whole bunch of price protections and insurance that essentially insulates them from the risk of farming. So when we talk about the bigger dynamic of agriculture using a vast majority of water in the basin, cities using a smaller amount, often the conversation then turns to market freedoms. Well, you know, farmers both grow food and supply food, and they meet a market demand, and they should have the freedom and do have the freedom to decide what to grow and what makes the most business sense for them. But when you look at cotton and you look at the way federal subsidies are influencing the decision to grow it in Arizona, what you see is a federal policy that basically runs contradictory to federal, state, and local efforts to conserve water and address the water crisis.
So after all of this research that you've done with this series, I'm curious to know what you see as a possible solution for the American Southwest.
You know, I think that part of pointing out a lot of problems like we're finding in farming in Arizona or in the way that Las Vegas has grown means that there's tangible things that can be changed. And the greatest opportunity to achieve water savings is going to come through efficiency more than great vast inventions or new pipelines from the Mississippi River and so forth.
Abram Lustgarten is an environmental reporter for online magazine ProPublica. Abram, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.